Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast. And this week, we're talking about the best commanders from Avatar. Hello, everyone. It's Commander Clash podcast time, and we're talking best commanders from Avatar. And I'm joined today by the small crew. No Krim today, but Phil and Tomer are here. How's it going today, guys?
Hey, yo.
It is doing well.
Pretty well. Gotta say, now that I played with the set, it is pretty good. It is refreshing to finally enjoy a new set again after, honestly, just one set of not enjoying it, but man, I like it.
It's close to Final Fantasy and Lord of the Rings for me. It is. I don't know if it's quite in that tier, but it's pretty close to being in that tier as far as like the best UV sets. But we got a lot of cool cards to talk about today. This set has a ton of sweet new commanders, so we better get into it. But first, We got a couple of sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1, or it'd be just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use the sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTG Goldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution to flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release the moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put a pack in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, I wasn't here. I was doing ban list stuff, but y'all talked about the best Avatar cards in the 99. And our top comment comes from Mr. Kajulis, who says, hearing Phil say that redirect lightning always be a blowout when it's played gave me an idea for a podcast discussion. Has the crew ever talked about cards that lead to hype moments during a game? Cards enable fun and exciting moments for the table could be something interesting to talk about. I don't think we've ever done that, and we probably should, because those are some of my favorite cards in Commander, or the cards that might not even be that good, but just create a memorable moment at the table.
I have a video
of a jewel.
I have a solo video that I scrapped and tried to do again. I tried to do a different styling of it and it didn't work out. And then I just never reshot the video, but I called them Uno reverse cards. But that's more like more of a narrow thing, stuff that you can like play that based on what your opponents are doing, you can kind of like turn the tables on them in a very glorious way, like Ink Shield and whatnot. But I feel like just like cards to tell a good story is also just a good topic.
We're gonna have to add that to the list, because I would like to talk about some of those cards, because I said, they're some of my favorites, so we'll get to it. That is a very good comment of the week, Mr. Kajulis. Definitely appreciate that one. Anyway, let's talk commanders from Avatar, and there's so many in the set. We're going to talk about some of the best ones, I think, but also some of our favorite ones, which we're just super hyped for. And let's start with the Avatar himself. Tomer, what do you got
for us? I'm the Avatar? Oh, thank you.
What's up, Aang?
I have the first one that I have for you. It's probably a crowd favorite, a crowd pleaser, if you will. I think it is the most popular commander from the entire set, and she almost killed Aang in the show, so shows a little bit of her power. It's Fire Lord Azula. It's a 4-mana Grixis, 4/4 legendary creature, human noble. It has firebending 2, which is a new mechanic from the set, which means whenever this creature attacks, you add 2 red mana. This mana lasts until end of combat. And whenever you cast a spell while Fire Lord Azula is attacking, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. So Fire Lord Azula is essentially like a Grixis storm deck. I know that's basically what it is. You attack with Azula. Azula generates 2 red mana. And you use that red mana and you just kind of pop off by casting stuff like Big Score. Big Score, you discard 4 mana, you discard a card, you draw 2 cards, you make 2 treasures. Well, with Azula copying every single thing you're casting during the attack step, now you for 4 mana, you discard 1 card, you draw 4 cards, and you make 4 treasures. So then you use that mana to cast other things, and you can mix and match instants with stuff with Flash, or maybe Flash enablers. Frantic Search, for example, you loot two cards, you untap two mana, or three mana, and then this it just makes you mana neutral and also card neutral, or card disadvantage. This one, now when you cast with Azula, you're actually up three mana, and you just like chain a bunch of stuff, and then all of a sudden, all your opponents are dead. You cast like those edicts, like Shielder's edicts.
Please.
Yeah, you cast like a Soul Shatter, and now all your opponents have to sacrifice two creatures with the highest mana value or power or whatever. And you just like pop off, and your opponents are just obliterated. So I think it's a very powerful commander. But what I like about it personally, it's just better, really budget friendly. Like a lot of the best cards for Azula. Are like dirt cheap, big score, unexpected windfall. A lot of the best cards, Frantic Search, a lot of the best cards are just like, they're like all under a dollar or something like that. And like, oh yeah, to get her out, you need like Talismans and two drop Mana Rocks. Again, very cheap. So very, very easy to assemble, very powerful, budget-friendly commander.
Yeah, I just assume kind of that's why Jeskai's Will is one of the most popular cards there. You just give everything Flash, and then you attack, and then maybe you don't even get Flash, but isn't that just a little too much?
It's a little bit scary.
It's too much.
It's a little Kalia-ish. It's an absurdly broken commander. I feel like it's way too pushed, but I do like that at least they can play it on a budget.
Yeah,
at least it doesn't have haste, I guess. So.
Yeah,
that's so scary, though. My
that's
God.
That's so scary.
So we... We have our Avatar Commander Clash coming up this coming Friday, so a couple of 3 days after this goes up, and someone might have played this during Commander Clash, and I can say it really sold me on just how scary this card is. Just actually seeing it in action and seeing it in a game, I figured it would be good, but then after seeing it in practice, I was like, oh my God, this card might, like kind of like Tomer, this might actually be a little bit too much. I think... Like Phil said, at least it doesn't have haste. And I think at a minimum, this is like a kill on sight commander, right? Yeah. Like you have to, the way to stop this, because it itself has to be attacking for its ability to work. So the way that you stop this is you just have to kill or counter Azula every time they play it, which like it kind of sucks because then the Azula player doesn't get to do anything because the rest of the deck is built around Azula. So I almost think this card's so good that it's going to be kind of frustrating to build around because it's going to lead to a lot of games where either everyone just kills your commander and you do nothing, or they don't kill your commander and you pop off and probably win the table. Those are your two pathways with a Fire Lord Azula deck.
I think the one upside is that she's so popular, but I've seen so many terrible deck lists online where they're just like full glass cannon, send, hope for the best. And it just means you get free wins so many times because like if they're running zero protection, zero interaction, and just hoping to attack with Azula and win the game off that, that just means one removal spell and their entire game plan just falls apart, which I guess is a silver lining. She's easy to counter if you're building it terribly.
But I think that's where the budget part also starts to fall apart, because then isn't the best way to protect it like Deflecting Swat and Fierce Guardianship and like hundreds of dollars of free interactive spells? So you don't need
one
those,
mana spells,
but those
to
are,
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's enough one mana spells to do it. And also, you don't actually have to try and kill everybody on turn three or something, you know? You could actually build a more controlling style and then just use Azula once she actually comes out. You double up on all those cards that happen to be good. Like, Shielder's Edict's effects are good, even if you cast them by themselves. But then when you double cast them with Azula, all of a sudden your opponents are just crushed. Their dreams are shattered. And that might be an even more powerful way of doing it.
Isn't that a little almost disrespectful to say, no, don't worry, guys. I'm just controlling you. I'm just attacking and then you sacrifice your entire board, so don't buy me and invite me next time, please.
I think I'd rather just have you storm off and actually kill me. Yeah.
It's more Azula-like to crush everybody's hopes and dreams.
That is true.
It's crazy that it also copies creatures, right? So dual caster mage or fairy mastermind.
Yeah.
Whew, scare snapcaster mage.
That's a crazy card. Well, let's move on to another crazy commander. Phil, what do you got for us?
Okay, so I got the actual most popular commander of the set, and I agree. And in spoiler season, people said, oh, that's like a combination of the things Phil does. It's Toph, the First Metalbender. pretty cool commander. Doesn't try to kill Aang. And it's, man, the first text box is so cool. It's so unique. So it's Naya, which I guess is interesting because, good lord, it's not green, blue. That would kind of, oh god. It's Naya and one. It's a 3/3 and non-token artifacts you control are lands in addition to the other types, which is means so much. And then at the beginning of your end step, Earthbend 2, which I guess you turn something into a 2/2, but in practice this means you turn into an artifact into something that comes back when it dies. So first of all, there's combos. There's Ugin's Nexus and Mindslaver, which, I mean, you gotta win somehow. But then the first part of the text box, the more you think about it, the cooler it is. Like, first of all, you can do landfall stuff with artifacts. So all these, like Tanuk, Lotus Cobra, Tireless Provisioner makes artifacts, non-token artifacts are lands. So the Tireless Provisioner treasures don't go infinite, luckily. But this, you can eke out a lot of value just by having this type. But then if you go, I mean, I guess this one's a bit pricey, but stuff like Candelabra of Thanos, like if you untap lands, you can now untap artifacts. Candelabra can untap itself and make infinite mana almost instantly. But there's so much stuff. There's, it's such a deep commander for... it's refreshing because artifacts and landfall, even though I do have two artifact decks and two landfall decks, I admit, they kind of do the same at some points, but it is fun. And combining both, it's going to be so cool. I can't afford to build it, though. Like, first of all, you need a lot of staples, and I'm not going to build another landfall or artifact.
It would be on brand, but there's no blue mana, so it doesn't actually fit Phil. It's got to have the blue in there.
Oh, my God, that would be disgusting. Yeah. If it was four color... oh, that was... we'd have so many uninteresting four-color commander. If this was just blue, red, green, white, I would like this just so we have an interesting four-color commander.
All right. Just like on there.
I'm kind of already playing, but Omnus is boring, though.
I love this card. I love... it's just, like, so unique, right? Turning all your artifacts, non-token artifacts, into lands is just such a unique ability. Worth pointing out, they don't actually tap for mana unless you give them an ability to tap for mana, which there are cards, of course, that do that. Chromatic Lantern, for example. There's a whole bunch that just let your lands tap for any color of mana. But it's just such a cool effect, and I think... it's one of those commanders that just gets you excited to brew around it because you can go so many different directions. Like Phil was saying, you can be landfall. You can take advantage of those shenanigans. You can do weird artifact aristocrat stuff where you're like sacking things to get them back. So it's just like a really unique and really flexible commander. But Tomer, what do you think on this Toph?
It's definitely one of the more unique lands mattering commanders.
I mean,
I don't like lands mattering commanders. I'm sorry.
Let me
all the same to me. I don't
this
care.
One's super unique, though. Come on.
Whatever.
It is unique. How strong do you think it is, Tomer? So we were just talking about Firelord Azula, Kill on Sight. Is Toph that level of scary where it's like this cannot stick on the battlefield for a turn? Or do you think you can let it stick around a little bit, maybe?
You're a lands deck. Obviously, you're the problem. It doesn't really matter what you stick in the command zone.
This time,
like,
you're also
this
an
or
artifact.
Omnath.
Yes, you're also an artifact,
okay.
So it's even worse.
Yeah. It's even worse. I just assume I'm going to lose to this. And then I just Joko hops the next game or something like that. I don't know.
Too bad
you can finally play any joins up. It's such a card that I always want to play. It doubles the triggered abilities from legendary creatures, but it's in Naya. I guess that's just the problem. But in this one, then you also double the Tanuk triggers and
so many. Also, like, so there's many like the thing that rotates the turn order and becomes a land, and you could sacrifice it. As
It's not extra turns.
It's not extra turns. But let's keep moving on. That's, yeah, definitely the most hyped commander or most build around commander from the set so far. So my first pick, and this is one of the more, I think it might be the sixth most popular commander on EDH Rec, something like that. But it's one of the more popular ones. And it's also one of my favorites because I love me some allies. I've loved allies ever since they first made them 15 years ago. And the one I'm most hyped about as far as new ally commanders is Sokka Tenacious Tactician. So this is a 4-mana Jeskai human warrior ally. It's a 3-3. It is menace and prowess. It says when you your other allies have menace and prowess, and then when you cast a non-creature spell, create a 1/1 white ally creature token. So Sokka, this is a commander that when you read it, it reads like a spellslinger commander, right? It's kind of like a expensive Jeskai Monastery Mentor in your command zone where you can cast a spell and you make this prowess token. You cast more spells, you get more tokens, you pump your team, you get a bunch of damage. I don't really care about that stuff. Like making a bunch of slinging a bunch of spells and pumping the tokens that I make from slinging the spells. I have a bunch of commanders that can do that. There's a bunch of ways you can do that with a spellslinger deck. The thing that intrigues me so much with Sokka is when I read this, I read whenever you cast a non-creature spell, trigger all of your allies. Because when you think about old allies, the whole gimmick of the original allies, like Andu Cleric, is they trigger whenever an ally enters based on the number of allies that you control. So Andu Cleric, for example, a 2-mana 1/1 says when it or another ally enters, you gain life equal to the number of allies you control. So if you get this going, and there's a bunch of, there's mill ones, there's damage ones, there's put counters on your team, there's a bunch of old allies like this. But if you get this going with Sokka, every count spell you cast is going to make more allies, and it's going to trigger all of your stuff to gain you more life, to draw you more cards. So it can get out of control really, really quickly. So I love, one of my big criticisms with the Spider-Man set is I felt like Spider-Man didn't really fit in Magic, right? You got all these spiders, it didn't fit in Ishkana, and color identity was weird. But I love how much this Avatar set really synergizes with the history of Magic. And the first thing I thought of when I saw Sokka wasn't, oh, that's a cool Avatar card. It's, wow, that's going to be so sweet with these allies they printed from 15 years ago. So I'm really hyped about the new allies. There's a few different cool ally commanders. Sokka's my favorite. But what do you guys think? What do you think of Sokka?
I love how allies play with the old allies. I played allies at the pre-release. Kind of sad that you don't have green here for the
Great Divine Guide.
Yeah, there's a bunch of payoffs there, especially the Mana Weft Sliver for allies.
Yeah, Great Divide Guide is the Mana Weft Sliver.
And then the Thalia's Lieutenant. I had both in it's such a good pool.
Wow, what a deck.
Also the one that gains life, but this one's white though. So that sucks, but then, man, they work so well together, triggering them with... So far, allies always felt like this super parasitic deck where you need all the cards from Zendikar and then they barely work and play like weird slivers, humans, mix, whatever. And now you have choices and they're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this card's insanely strong because it's not just... It's like two parts of a commander that got smooshed together without increasing its mana cost, where if it just said, whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you make a 1/1 ally creature token, that's already very good. Because allies, as you say, get really, really good when you have a bunch of them on the battlefield and the older allies have a bunch of triggered abilities that want you to go wide. Going wide is difficult because like those cards are balanced around the fact that you actually have to pay mana to cast your allies. There's not really a lot of ally tokens out there. And the ones that do make them are very like inefficient. And this one is just like the most efficient ally generator out there. And then on top of it, it also gives them all menace and prowess. So it's also the finisher for the deck too. So you just have to cast non-creature spells. Just chain a bunch of them, cast them for very cheap, cast the frantic searches and stuff. And then suddenly, boom, bang, you have a lethal army. You don't even actually need the older allies. Like, they're good. But, like, you could just ignore all allies and just run non-creature spells and storm off and kill people that way with Sokka. But then on top of that, it's just better to run, like, the best older allies, mix them together in there. So the card is insanely strong. I do think it's cool, though, because, like, you don't really get to see allies that often because they definitely needed some help. And now, suddenly, they're going to be a powerhouse, so... That's cool to at least be able to see them now. But, oh my God, it's so strong.
I built this deck also maybe for an upcoming Commander yes. Clash, but I landed with like, I think I have 17 allies in the deck, and those were all the creatures in the deck, and then almost 50 non-creature spells, and I just really hard overloaded on protection spells, right? Just any cheap protection that you could use so you can keep Sokka on the battlefield to make it hard to disrupt, and it actually feels pretty good. So yeah, I think Sokka is pretty powerful, and I'm excited too to see allies get their day in the sun for a little bit. But let's keep moving on. Tomer, what do you got? Pick number two.
All right. This is my personal favorite one. I think it is also a popular one. Yes. It is currently, it's not as popular as Azula or Toph, but it's still quite up there and is a bit boring, but I am biased and I like it anyway. Avatar Aang. It's a four-color commander on the front side. Well, it's a four-color creature on the front side. However, it is a five-color commander because it has all color pips on the back side. So it's four-color, red, green, white, blue, four mana for four legendary creature. Human avatar ally, it has flying, firebending, too. Whenever you waterbend, earthbend, firebend, or airbend, draw a card. Then if you've done all four this turn, transform Avatar Aang. The backside is a 6/6 flyer. All your spells cost Wooburg less to cast, and it also reduces generic costs. And then at the beginning of each upkeep, you may transform Aang back to the front side. And if you do, you gain four life, draw four cards, put four counters on him, and he deals four damage to each opponent. Now this is like the corporate mandated five color Universes Beyond commander. Literally every single Universes Beyond set is going to have, or already has, a five color commander. And their primary purpose, I believe, is just that you can run all cards from that IP under one commander. And like commanders always have like such a high power floor that like even if you just like jam a bunch of random crap from that set, from that IP into it, the commander does enough that it's going to kind of like do its thing enough that you can hang at like your LGS. So this one, whenever you're doing set mechanic, you draw a card. Not exactly the most original thing. However, what I do like about it is it does make you want to stick to the set, right? Because all these bendings, you can only find in an avatar. So it only makes sense that you jam all avatar cards in the set to draw as many cards as possible. And if like the purpose of this card is to just run avatar cards and let your avatar deck be avatar-y, I feel like A+ design there. And then the backside's very exciting, but like doing all four bending all on the same turn, very difficult. It feels like it's like something that you will happen every once in a while. When it happens, it's very cool, but it's irrelevant to the actual power level of this card. It's a 4-mana 4/4 flyer that draws you a card every single time you're attacking, and then it will draw more cards as you're doing avatar things. I like Avatar. I like the set, and I was actually convinced after playing this on Commander Clash, I'm just going to make an Avatar-only deck. I'm just only cards from the Avatar set, and this will be my leader. And so, job well done, Wizards. This is its purpose, and I bought it. So
see, I knew you were the Avatar, Tomer. Look at this one.
I opened the
not
the super fancy one.
Oh, that's like pretty expensive too, isn't it? That's a hit.
It's fine.
Yeah, I got a regular one.
Kind of sad that I didn't. Yeah, kind of sad that I didn't open my boosters when I was with you then. Otherwise, you could have this for your deck if you use it.
Oh, nice.
One thing I love about this design, and I think you hit on it, that like the backside's incredibly busted, right? Like a discount of Wooburg, including your colored mana cost and generic cost, is going to make a lot of your cards free. Like if you actually get to the backside, you're going to have a ridiculous turn. But the thing I like about it is not only is it hard to actually do all the bendings in one turn and flip it, but to have all the bendings in your deck, you have to play a bunch of the cards from Avatar, so you can't really, I don't think, go super in on like comboing off with the backside, because the stuff you need to flip it is not necessarily going to be the stuff that would pop off the hardest with the backside. So even though the backside's incredibly scary, I think it naturally like keeps itself in check a little bit. But the front side's so strong. It's a little bit like Kefka in the sense that I don't even know if you need to flip it to be good. You're just fine with generating a huge amount of card advantage from this sitting out on the battlefield. And if you're playing the all avatar deck, You're going to trigger it a bunch of times. I've been messing around with this card in Standard during Early Access Day, and I was surprised how often I was airbending something without even trying to draw a card with this. I just naturally would play an airbending card. I'm like, oh my God, now I'm drawing cards. And then maybe you have Katara the Fearless to double trigger it, and you're like drawing two cards, and it just gets out of hand really, really quickly.
Remember that episode on in Avatar when somebody said, ooh, moon mist, and every every Avatar flipped.
That is the way.
Sadly, that's not the way. In the set, but the easy way is just two mana instant.
Moon mist.
Flip it with moon mist, and then pop off King. The backside is so crazy.
Ooh, the backside is ridiculous.
How is this wording? Like, spells cost Wuburg less to cast? Does it say this can reduce generic mana cost?
It says it on the card.
Wait, so with other cards, like with Morophon, it says it can only reduce colored mana, right?
Yes.
For a magic player's brain, it's like, no way this reduces generic mana. It's so easily breakable and so... Oh my god.
yeah, because the Morphon one specifically says it reduces only the amount of colored mana.
Okay,
and this one specifically says you can use it to reduce generic mana.
Yeah. Well, it's ridiculous. It's
otherwise
obscene.
I don't think it would ever know. You need to have that extra text or else I have no idea if it does or not.
Yeah,
even, honestly.
Seems very unintuitive, but my god.
Oh, all right, Phil, what do you got for us?
Okay, I've got one that's, I mean, I'm still kind of a Team Wolf player at heart, but this one's a little different this time. Not too different, though. It's Iroh, Grand Lotus, 3 and Timur, Firebending 2, 5/5. During your turn, each non-lessened instant and sorcery card in your graveyard has flashback. Flashback cost is equal to the mana cost. And during your turn, each lessened card in your graveyard has flashback 1. First of all, the power creep, because what's the Grixis commander that lets you flashback one thing?
Cast Dissident Mage. I think it's only
this
four
just,
mana, but like your green, so it's basically the same as four mana.
Oh my god. Yeah, the fact that you... So this is mono green. Oh no. It's even worse. It's Timur Spellslinger. There's this dinosaur that is also a Timur Spellslinger, but this time it's just... Oh my god, everything has flashback is crazy, and with green you have all the growth spirals, all the nature's lore to get all the mana to cast your 1,000-year storm and then pop off even harder. The gravy is the lesson thing. We did get very playable lessons in Shared Roots, which we would probably play anyways. And then, there's old... I guess Accumulate Wisdom. Very, very, very good in this deck. You can finally justify playing enough lessons for it. The old lessons are very underpowered, but playing Mascot Exhibition for one mana is cool.
Yeah.
Teachings of the Archaics or something, if you want to catch
That's
up.
Card
although
draw,
I don't
right?
think. Yeah, I'm not sure if you can catch up on card draw in this deck because you're just going to draw with your Explores and Growth Spirals. Oh, man. This is kind of scary as well, though. I admit that playing this and saying, just let me untap with this is...
No.
Yeah, at least the graveyard is open information, okay? It's not like Azula where you say they probably have it in hand. At least you can say there's no Mascot Exhibition in there yet.
It's like so beyond that, though, because, okay, it's literally just a pass in flames in the command zone.
No,
but
oh
also,
God,
but also, I guess, like, the fact that lessons... are not like super strong is like the only thing from keeping it from being like somewhat okay. But even like, just imagine it's your teamer and you have Pass and Flames in the command zone. We've seen what like these Pass and Flames does usually, you know, like you cast your mana geysers and stuff and you just like combo off and win the game. So you can even ignore the lesson part. But I find the lesson part actually very interesting because this is another commander that like really fits well if you want to make an Avatar only deck. Because like Phil said, almost all the good lessons are in this set. We don't have any, like from Strixhaven, there's like one or two that are kind of interesting. But most of them are just an Avatar. So you could, again, feasibly make an Avatar-only deck. And this is a really good choice for it. Because you take like these kind of like mid-lesson cards, and suddenly when you're casting one mana for them, they're very good. And then there's like a bunch of like creatures that say like your non-creature spells cost one less to cast. And that means they just cost zero. And then if you just like run every single lesson that says like draw a card or something like that, you can pop off.
Here's a good lesson.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't even know this one. A Whirlwind Technique from the Jumpstart set. Six mana, I guess one mana. Target player draws two cards, then discards a card, so you can throw in another lesson, and then airbend up to two target creatures, so you can also tempo people out. It's for just any lesson for one mana gets playable. Funnily enough, the Strixhaven ones, even for one mana, most of
still
them kind of
waterbending technique, draw three cards, then discard a card unless you waterbend two. That's four mana, but like if you cast it for one, draw three, discard one is like,
That's
I will.
Great.
Thanks.
The only thing I'd add that I think you guys can touch on is there's also a bunch of cards from Avatar that care about lessons that aren't lessons, but like if you have three lessons in your graveyard, I do something cool like Ran and Saw, you get multiple dragons, or Sokka Bold Boomerang. When you every play a lesson, it gets counters. So it is kind of built in a way. The turtle thing, the lion turtle thing becomes this big creature that ramps once you get lessons going. So there's a lot of support for that. So I think on one hand, the lesson text is kind of a trap, and you can just play this as a Past in Flames and some super busted Spellslinger deck. But you could also go the complete other direction and build a deck that really is like a lesson deck, and that would probably make this a little bit fairer of a card and maybe more fun. I think that it's almost like Firelure Azula. If you're doing the Spellslinger thing, you just can't let someone untap with this, right? Like, I would expect if you untap with this, you win the game. Like, it's pretty much that. So.
I have full mana for Pass in Flames. Yeah, that should be GG, right? Like,
it should. Yeah, I don't know.
Unless
how you
I
don't
have no graveyard. I guess
you have green this time. That's so scary. Yeah. Usually, these Spellslinger decks have a hard time ramping without rituals. This time, it's just easy most. It's crazy.
All right, let's move on to the next one, and this is maybe my personal favorite from the set, definitely on the list, and that's High Bay Forest Guardian. So High Bay, it's a 4-mana 4/4 bear spirit. It says, when it enters, reveal cards on the top of your library until you reveal a shrine card. You can put that card on the battlefield and then shuffle, and then you can pay Wooburg and tap it, and for each legendary enchantment you control, you create a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token with this token can't block or be blocked by a non-spirit creature. So the token's not super exciting. They're kind of, I guess they're good on offense, not very good on defense. But here's why I'm excited about High Bay. Shrines are super cool. Like, they first did them in Kamigawa. They brought them back in Corset 2020 or something. But, like, they've printed them a few different times. They're really unique. They're really fun. They're these enchantments that just all care about each other and reward you for putting up a ton of them on the battlefield. But then Wizards made a huge mistake, which is there were no Shrine Commanders. And they're like, we need to make a Shrine Commander. And they printed Goshen Tai of Life's Origins in Our Return to Kamigawa. And Goshen Tai, it is a shrine commander, but it's just so strong that it actually makes shrines less fun. Like, you're playing this janky enchantment type with what should be a low-power deck, but the commander is just so good that it turns you into the arch enemy, and you either pop off and win, or you get taken out of the game. I feel like High Bay is what I want out of a shrine commander. It still cares about shrines. It's still pretty powerful, right, where you can use it to, like, get a shrine directly on the battlefield when you play it, and then, I guess, maybe make tokens with it. But I feel like it's not as busted as Goshen Tai, where you're immediately just going to be arch enemy every time you play this. I see Tomer rolling his eyes over there. Am I missing on this? Is this actually close to Goshen Tai in power level?
I mean, you're right. It is. I think High Bay is weaker overall than Goshen Tai, but I think it would actually be stronger in a high interaction environment where people are actively trying to kill your commander. Because it's like an ETB, and you get a shrine immediately. Whereas Goshen Tai really wants to be on the battlefield, because the longer it's on the battlefield, the more shrine tokens it can poop out. But it needs to stick around. So I do agree it's a slightly more chill, but like I feel the ship has long sailed for shrines being a casual deck set. I'm sorry. If you show your shrines, I'm sorry. Like, you're gonna overrun the table in like two turns if you're allowed to just free cast your stupid shrines. And then you start blinking this awful, awful thing. And now suddenly I'm like taking quadruple damage from my like your red shrine or whatever. And they just printed a whole bunch of new shrines that are absolutely insane.
Yeah. Oh, shrines with like enters insane. Triggers. Yeah.
Yeah, they're enter now they're even harder to deal with because you're like, just board wipe the enchantress deck because you just play white and board wipe them. It's like, no, I already got my instant value. The spirit oasis, 3 mana, enters, draws a card for each shrine you control. What
yeah,
the
this one.
What the
it is,
yeah. and then whatever another one draws comes you draw more cards and the Kyoshi Plaza is just like, I'm just gonna ramp all the lands from my deck while to the battlefield. You think shrines are chill, Seth?
Then you'd have to play basics. Who's playing enough basics for that to
I've got a basics. Got it. That's a good point, but still.
I think the funniest part of shrines is actually you hit on the card draw shrine. It's one of the cleanest, I think, examples of power creep if you just look at the blue card draw shrine through history. Because, like, originally it was 5 mana and you, like, draw your next upkeep. Then it went down to 4 mana and you draw on your end step. And now it's just, like, 3 mana you draw right away. It's just every time they print it, it just gets so much better. What do you think,
Phil? Uncommons. It's like, they're uncommons.
See,
like, you're just crushing me now.
It's like a budget deck.
Gotta get the foil. And the original Kamigawa is probably I don't know. I don't make the rules.
how chill do you think this is, Phil? Does this give me what I want, like a shrine commander that isn't going to make me archenemy? Or do you think, as Tomer is saying, it's actually still just so busted that you're still going to be the archenemy?
I kind of liked it for the same reason, because when I read it, it's like, wait, it doesn't make shrine tokens? How refreshing.
It just simply puts shrines onto the battlefield directly.
Yeah, it just puts them into play.
So chill.
Yes. Sounds fair.
For 4 mana, 4/4, that is pretty good.
And then you ephemerate it, and you just keep double blinking it.
Once you want to activate the token mode, or very rarely would you activate the token mode. That mode, they could erase that off there, and I wouldn't care. Like, that mode doesn't matter to me.
I would actually prefer it if it had flavor text and just a cleaner text box.
Oh, that, that I guess actually was just to make colors, it five color, right? Yeah.
It was to make it five color, yes. Mm. And then it gives them a win condition because sometimes shrine players like to not attack ever. And then
this
one makes tokens that can't block. And you're like, well, if I can't block it, they can't be blocked.
I
might as well.
Oh my God, you're right.
And I was like, thank God. Thank God for that extra text. Just end me.
Yeah, shrines in general. Like, do you have mass enchantment removal? If not, I'm just going to wipe and shrine. And this kind of incentivizes board wiping because you want to recast it, which a shrine deck usually does. So I don't know. Shrines are not chill anymore since some time.
And the new ones are. They ruined it, Seth. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they ruined shrines. Boom. They made them too good. I want them to be worse. But okay. Maybe high bay. I'm still more excited to play it than Ocean Tide because I think Ocean Tide is just too much for me. But maybe it's not as chill as I was hoping. But let's keep moving on. Tomer, what do you got for the next round?
All right, fine. Let's have a silly one. We talked about like some really pushed commanders, but we haven't talked about the most pushed of them all. It is, wait for it.
I know.
Gran.
Gran.
What is it with you and old women, Tomer? Every time Gran. I see a trend here.
She's actually insane, and nobody believes me. But Gran, 1 mana blue, 1/2, legendary creature, human peasant ally. I love that she's a peasant as well. Whenever Gran becomes tapped, draw a card, then discard a card. Non-creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast as long as there are 3 or more lesson cards in your graveyard. Now, Gran. Is actually bedonkers, because if you have any ways of just like repeatedly tapping her, she works really well with like spaceships and vehicles, for example. If you can have her like tapping, then she's a looter. She's like a 1 mana looter. Like, yes, you have to work a little bit for the looting, but she's a Murfric looter for half price. And then on top of that, she's also making all your non-creature spells cost 1 less to cast, as long as you have 3 lessons in the graveyard. Now, there's not that many great lessons in mono blue, but there are enough that you could turn this on at some point. And then she's like, at the very least, a half-costed like mana discount creature that does the same thing. So she's a half-costed looter, half-costed mana discount creature, but all onto a 1-drop. She does both at the same time. you can do crazy things. Like you can start cloning her and then suddenly like her, all your non-creature spells are just have like zero generic costs to them. And you can start popping off that way. If you, you could do like intruder alarm shenanigans where whenever you're casting a creature, you untap her and then you loot some more. You add like a bunch of stuff that says like whenever you draw an extra card, like the Teferi's Aegis Insight and stuff like that. And then you can like go full Voltron with her because you've drawn so many cards. And then you like put on like Imperial armor or something on her. And then you punch people in the face for insane damage. Gran. And she also makes up your armor again. Cost one less.
Angry grandma, yeah.
She's Tover amazing. Loves
his one drop Voltron.
She's amazing.
I actually think this card is pretty good. Like, I don't know about this Voltron plan Tomer's talking about, but I think the cost reduction's kind of unique, right? When I think of those cost reductions, they're usually instants and sorceries, right? Mm-hmm. Like, most of them, just all non-creature spells. So this is a cost reduction for artifacts and enchantments and planeswalkers. I can't think of another cheap creature that does that. They're mostly more restricted than that, from what I can remember. So I think that's already exciting. And then, like you said, the looting is nice, too. I'm just not sure, like...
That's how you get the lessons in the graveyard.
It is. But, like... This isn't a strong commander, right? This is more like a lower bracket commander, probably.
The strongest
like
commander from the set.
Okay.
Strongest
I take it back.
One. Move over Fire Lord Azula. You're nothing.
Grand is here.
I wish it was two colors. It's kind of sad that you have to be. Like, once your graveyard gets exiled one time, I think you are out of luck for the ability.
There's not that many.
It is one mana. I was kind of shocked when I read this how much text there's for one mana, and it's kind of.
It even has flavor text somehow thrown in there.
I mean, it had to have flavor text. But yeah, it's. Yeah, right. Prove me wrong. So show me grandma tribal.
Show me the power of grandma.
Yeah, grandma.
You have to have a grandma class. It'll be Aunt May versus Grand
versus
two other grandmas. We'll throw hands.
Oh, we can do like a Mother's Day clash. Get a Mother of Runes in there. Grand.
That'd be great.
One for all of our mother fans out there with our analytics do not suggest we have a lot of mothers that watch our videos. But hopefully more will watch
We're
if we make a Mother's Day episode. Yes.
Starting today.
Phil, what do you got for your next pick?
All right. I like this one. It is Upper Steadfast Guardian. I just ordered it for a new commander deck. Just for the 99, though, although as a commander, it is also very cool. It is 4 mana, 3/4 Flying Flash. When Upper enters airband any number of target non-land permanents you control, and whenever you cast a spell from exile, create an ally token. A 1/1 ally token. So this one is like... It's a little like Yorion, like blink every kind of permanent, like sagas, you can reset them. You have to recast them for two. But the cool part about it is it's kind of easy to get them down to zero. Not very easy, but stuff like Semblance Anvil, if it's a specific creature type, it's Urza's Incubator or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it also doesn't really matter if you pay two mana for your... Avatar, whatever, the new Saga Avatar, or your Elspeth Conquers Death, or your Restoration Angel, and then you cast this and flicker Upper again, and then you can go into loops with this, which is also why I kind of like it. Also, it does, once you start one of these loops, you can just have mana rocks that tap for more than two mana, and then exile them, recast them for two, tap them before you exile them, and net mana, and then you can pay for everything, and people are going to love it. Mm. They're going to say, oh, do the cool thing again. We go infinite.
It works really well with like
we
Grand
like
Dynamos
to watch you play
and stuff,
for a half
sure.
hour, Phil. Keep gilding those spells.
Gilded Lotus. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
also, so I'm building a mono-white life gain deck for my girlfriend and me to play as well, because I always wanted to do this. And she loves Appa, and then I thought, well, I might just put it in the 99. And the more that I think about it, we didn't mention it in the 99 episode, but this kind of saves your board, and it also saves non-land permanents. So you can just have it in the command zone, build up a scary bot and say pass. And people are going to think, well, I'm not going to wrath if they just blink the bot. Not really blink. Yeah. So the tokens, if you go with the token plan, I didn't really go too deep on how this triggers Caretaker's talent, of course. Tokens will vanish from airbending, but if they drew a card, who cares?
This card is absolutely crazy. That was one of my biggest takeaways from early access day, is that airbending is obscenely broken.
Like, it's the best bending, yeah.
The tricks that you're talking about making your stuff free, not that hard to go infinite with that, because Appa also makes an ally token. Whenever he has Dispel from exile, all you really need is a Semblance Anvil or any cost reduction to make your stuff free. Appa in the command zone in any other airbending card,
oh,
and you just have the infinite
Alta
loop where you can just like airbend the Appa, then you put it into exile, and then airbend the other thing, airbend Appa, blink all your stuff, cast it for free, make a bunch of tokens. So it's very, very easy to just go infinite, make infinite tokens with this. And then you can also add in other like stuff that casts whenever or triggers whenever you cast a creature, like God Eternal, a Ketra makes more tokens, or so forth. So I think this is just like a ridiculous combo commander that you can also play fairly if you want to. But if I see this in the command zone, I'm going to be really scared that you could pop off and win like any turn by drawing the Semblance Anvil.
Yeah, you can play Ashnod Elta and then sacrifice the tokens to pay for airbending and
So there's multiple ways you can set up the loop. It's a crazy card.
Yeah, I think Appa. I'm happy that Appa got a card fitting for his stature from the show.
Yeah,
because
best
he was always the goat.
Now, I ordered it after the pre-release, and it was like $10 in the cool version, not foil. But is that? You played like this infinite deck in standard. Did this seem competitive? The list looked competitive.
It went. The man is a little janky until we get the rest of the fetch lands, but it is another like turn four win combo deck. So I think there's a chance that it's actually like a real standard deck. It's always, you don't want to read too much into early access.
Yeah, I guess.
And you can do it at instant speed. Well, it might be harder to do. Is there another flash airbender in mono white? Because in standard, you can go instant speed with Aang Swift Savior, but that's in Azuria. So I don't know if there's another like flash airbender you can play in mono white and commander, but still, it's ridiculous. Yeah, the mechanic's very good. Well, all right, let's move on. I'm gonna go with my fun pick, I guess. One of my fun picks. And this card, this is partly for Krim, who couldn't be here today, because I know he'd be picking this card. Lowenli, Royal Advisor. So Lowenli, it's a 4-mana black 3/3, except actually it's a Dimir commander because of its activated ability. It says it's a human advisor. It says whenever opponent discards a card or mills one or more cards, put a +1/+1 counter on each advisor you control. And then you can pay 3 mana, including a Dimir hybrid, to have target player mill 4 cards. So Lowenli, Royal Advisors, it gives us a commander for advisors. Like, this is an advisor tribal commander, and it works really well with one advisor in specific, which is Persistent Petitioners. Persistent Petitioners, it's an advisor that you can play any number of in your deck, and you can tap them to mill your opponent's cards, or tap a bunch of them to mill even more cards. So it's like they're built to go together. Like, you can play this in a deck full of Persistent Petitioners, tap the petitioners to mill cards, and those are going to grow your petitioners, and then you can actually beat your opponent down and win the game instead of just sitting there and trying to mill your opponent out. So it is a narrow commander, but I really like when tribes that never had a legend get a legend that makes sense for them. And I think this actually makes a lot of sense if you actually want to build an advisor deck. I know people play Persistent Petitioners with Burvac, but Burvac doesn't actually care about advisors. It just cares about milling. So I like that we have a commander that is actually like, if you want to play a bunch of advisors, you can put them all together. So I don't think this is one of the like super strong commanders from the set, although I do think it's pretty easy in a deck that would want this as their commander to make your team really big really quickly, because you're going to have a bunch of mill effects, and every time you mill, being able to get a counter on your team is going to get out of hand pretty fast. But what do you guys think of Lowenli?
Oh, the viewers already know what we think, because as you would have guessed, Krim already mentioned this, even though we were talking about the 99ers in the lightning rounds. He said, well, let's talk about a commander. And he already mentioned these, and I assume he's going to bother you with them on Clash. I guess it's better than Burvac, although the discard is yucky.
Yeah, I would build around the mill. The discard, that's a little mean.
I mean, this is I love this one because it's yet another one for the grandma clash, the right?
Yes.
We've seen one more that somebody likes, and then boom, we've got it. We've got Aunt May. We've got Gran-Gran on Lonely. We just need one more that somebody attunes to, and then we're good for the clash. I think it's good. I think it's a little bit, I guess, more interesting than Bruvac, but like, it's a persistent practitioner deck. Yeah. I think it's probably weaker than Bruvac, but then you have access to black, and you also have a secondary way of winning, which is actually like beating people down. And then access to black does mean you have a lot more graveyard chanting, and black is a really good color at utilizing your opponent's graveyards against them. So you can like reanimate their stuff with like Sepulchral Primordial and stuff. So you could not like have to necessarily mill everybody out, but rather you mill them in order to utilize their graveyard. Whereas like when you do Bruvac with Persistent Practitioners, you're just milling them out. Like that's all you're trying to do basically. And this one has a little bit more variety to it. And Grandma Clash.
It is worth mentioning that there are other advisors too. Like there's not a ton of advisors, but it doesn't have to be a full-on persistent petitioner deck. You could build it as like just a janky non-petitioner deck too. But anyway, let's do one more round. Okay. Not a full lightning round, but like semi-lightning round. Let's start with you again, Tomer. What do you got for your final pick?
There's a lot of really powerful commanders, and I could like spend the entire time talking about like the strongest
ones.
Yeah,
you made a 3-hour video of doing that already.
Yeah.
You should check it out on the channel. Tomer's got it all covered.
All of them. And, like, so there's like Toph, Hard-Headed Teacher, which I think is obscene. There's like Aang. There's a whole bunch. I also don't know which ones you're going to be covering. But there was one land-based commander that I'm actually, like, very excited for. And if I had to play lands, I hate lands decks. But if I had to play a lands deck, it would probably be Boomy Unleashed. It's a 5-mana Gruul, 5/4 legendary human noble ally has trample. When it enters, you earthbend 4. And whenever Boomy deals combat damage to a player, untap all lands you control. After this phase, there's an additional combat phase. Only land creatures can attack during that combat phase. So in Avatar, earthbending is one of the primary mechanics. It's primarily green, and it's like green-red is the two main colors. And it's all about just like animating your lands. And at least in Avatar, you attack with the lands. You animate the lands. You turn them into creatures and you attack with them. And obviously, outside of Avatar, the most powerful way of utilizing earthbending is just sacrificing them. You know, you earthbend a fetch land. You sacrifice the fetch land. It comes back. And we're talking about like, oh, Toph, the first metal bender. Isn't it great that you can earthbend all these things and then just sacrifice them? And I'm just like, man, that's every single lands deck. Every single lands deck is like, wow, isn't it amazing? If you put so many lands on the battlefield and you sacrifice them and you play them again, wow, the novelty. It's so amazing, you guys. And I'm like, my brain like immediately like just shuts off the moment somebody mentions like Scoot Swarm or whatever the hell. And my brain just like, oh, the land vultures. No, the novelty of this, the novelty of earthbending and Avatar is you actually hit people with the lands. You don't sacrifice them. Like you can, there's a little bit of sacrificing because it's the most optimal thing to do, whatever. But like, isn't it novel that the lands you play are not meant to be sacrificed and it's just not just landfall triggers? Isn't that, and that's the main intent of the design here, and that's actually the original way of using it.
You can just hit people with a Warspawn Hydra if you want to hit people with
boring landfall. Get the landfall out of here. Get your fetches out of here. I just want to hit people with the lands, and I want to do it in a fair way. And this one's great. You just hit somebody in the face. You get an extra combat. Oh, you can untap all your lands and use it in different ways. Who cares? I want to attack with my lands.
Hit them again.
I want to hit them again. And it's great.
Wait, so the interesting part is Boomy doesn't say it can't attack. It just says non-land creatures can attack. So if you have Ashaya, which is kind of cheap nowadays, you can just infinite combat with this very easily once you get through
just
That's boring.
Tomer needs the perfect amount of attacking. Multiple combats, but not all the combats.
There was a Toph from the scene thing that just gives all your lands. It ETBs, makes earth bends, and gives all your lands double strike. I change it. No Boomy. I just go for the double strike ones.
But,
stop trying to break
but
it.
But Tomer, if you put a Shaya in that deck.
A fun fact about Boomy and all Earthbenders, the symbol kind of looks like an Among Us figure. And now that I see it, I don't think I can unsee this again. The thing in the background, the watermark.
Oh, yeah. It actually looks exactly like it.
The never ending meme.
That was the closest I could do to try and do something green lane basedy, and it's already ruined. So never mind. I take it back.
I hate all these lane strategies.
They all suck. Get green out of here. All right, your go.
Phil, what do you got?
Okay, so this one. It is another beloved color. It is blue, and it's mono blue. And it is actually, I think, the first time we've seen a commander reference this type of anything. It is Washington All-Knowing, not the expensive one, although this one is kind of expensive now that I look at it, and it opened it in foil. So very good to have, I guess. It is 5 mana, 4/4 flying. When it enters, target non-land permanent, target non-land permanent's owner puts it into their library, second from the top or on the bottom. And, I mean, we've seen this before, but this one. Whenever one or more cards are put into a library from anywhere, create 2/1/1 colorless spirit tokens with these spirits. They can block or attack or whatever. They're the spirit tokens from the set. So the first time I think something references putting something in a library from anywhere, which is very open-ended. Like, of course, you can do stuff like its own trigger triggers it, and it's actually very good tempo if you put stuff on the bottom, especially if you copy the trigger or flicker it. But then also stuff like Memory Lapse Draw does this, and then Sensei's Divining Top triggers this. Like, there's infinite. So many cards that you don't think about at first, like Scroll Rack, Brainstorm. Of course, they are super pricey because they're usually limited cards, like the stuff that puts stuff into the library. But it's kind of cool. I guess Subtlety is another one. Expel from Oraska if you have the City's Blessing. Teferi's Puzzle Book. Wait, at the beginning of the... Yeah. There's so many cards that put stuff on the bottom. Also from anywhere. It can be from the graveyard. Kind of sad that it's mono blue, but still super interesting, and you're going to play a lot of cards that you've never played before.
Those are the best kind of commanders, right? The commanders that make you play all these weird cards that you wouldn't play in any other deck. So yeah, I'm actually excited about this one too. I don't think it'll be like oppressively powerful probably, but it's one of those cards that seems really fun to build around just because it's so unique.
Vendilion Click as well.
Very cool.
So many.
I love when they come up with like a commander that does something that is very specific and uses cards in a different way than other commanders do. And
it creates two tokens, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if I read one token, but two tokens, they add up and they're hard to block.
And you can't block them, yeah.
If you could probably like make like two at least per turn, maybe more. Like you just start doing a bunch of blink stuff and control the board, and then you're brainstorming and scroll racking and whatnot. Well, seems really fun.
You can do the...
go even like spirits as a support archetype as well.
Yeah, you can play Supreme Phantom, Spirit Lords. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting.
It serves as a spirit as well, yeah.
And you could probably go infinite with top pretty easy, right? Do the same, like infinite top loops make infinite tokens, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last pick. In my last pick, I think I'm going to just go with a card I think super cool. I don't know how good it is. Ko the Face Stealer. So Ko is a mono black commander. It looks like a combo commander, but I don't think it actually is a combo commander. It's a 6/6 shapeshifter spirit. When it enters, you exile up to one target creature. So kind of a duplicant or whatever, an expensive exile removal spell. It says whenever another non-token creature dies, you may exile it, and then you can pay a life and choose a creature card that's exiled with it, and it gains all of the activated and triggered abilities of the last chosen card. So when I first read this, I assumed, okay, new combo commander, the same combos that work with Necrotic Ooze or Mimeoplasm Revered One, these commanders that can change into different things and steal activated abilities. You can do those with Ko. But the more I thought about Ko, the more I realize it's actually going to be very hard to combo with this, right? Like, you, because you have to only, the only things that you can steal the activated and triggered abilities from are things that go on the battlefield and then get exiled with Ko. It's going to be very difficult to set up. And I think that's a positive. I think if it was easy to combo with this card, it would be much less interesting to me, because that is just another, like, oh, I'm trying to get these two specific things and I win the game. I get my, whatever, my thing that allows it to tap for a bunch of mana and my thing that untaps it, and then I just go infinite and I win the game. But I think as a value card, the card actually seems very fun. Like, it gives you some graveyard hate to some extent, where you can exile stuff from the battlefield. It's a removal spell. And then there's just so many powerful abilities working with activated and triggered abilities. You're going to be able to change this into some really cool cards and just get value out of it. So I'm kind of excited to build a Ko deck that isn't trying to combo with it at all, but is just trusting that there's going to be some cool activated and triggered abilities, and I'm going to be able to eat them up and do fun things with this card. But what do you guys think about Ko?
You can pay your entire life and do things with this.
It is a life swap. It can be a life swap commander too. Yeah, you can pay down to one and do the repaying kind shenanigans or whatever.
Yeah, I was like trying to see if there's any combos that people broke with it. And usually you have to be multiple colors, but like the only one that you could find in mono black, and I don't even know if it's infinite, but you get, if you have Ko, Asmodeus, the Archfiend, which has like triple black, draw seven cards, and then Scourge Familiar, which discard a card, you add a black. I don't know. You only have to pay one life. So yeah, you could do that a whole bunch of times and to like draw seven and then discard the cards,
and you could probably draw your deck and make all the mana,
make infinite mana that way. Yeah,
although like the tricky part is like, how would you get that set up with Ko? You'd have to like play Asmodeus, exile it to Ko, then you have to play Skirk Familiar, kill it, exile it with Ko. Like, it seems like it's a lot of effort to go infinite with, which I think, like I said, I'm kind of excited that it's not easy to go infinite with.
I like that it's very versatile. Like, it has a nice ETB. Black doesn't really have that many blinks, but you have a bunch of like cheat death effects, so you could like purposely sacrifice it to things to reuse its exile ability, and then you could just be like annoying and have shenanigans with it, which I think is cool. It's just like a nice versatile mono black commander. I think it would be a really cool deck that just is like very different all the time.
And it kind of like to some extent scales with the table, because the more cool activated and triggered abilities your opponents have, the more cool things you can steal with Ko. But anyway, those are our top commanders from Avatar. If you got a favorite commander from the set, let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear about it. And we'll be back next week to talk some more commanders. So until then, everyone, have a great week. And this is the crew signing out.